Okay, thanks, Sheldon. So first I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. So this is a joint work with Arthur Charpentier, who's also a colleague of mine at UQAM. So this is about multivariate integer valued autoregressive models applied to earthquake counts. So if you're interested in the paper, it is available on archive and another website as well, so it's pretty easy to find. Okay, so it's really obvious that major earthquakes can cause very significant damage, and we can just think about what happened in Japan in March 2011. And when we think about earthquake risk, it is usually assumed by reinsurance companies. So usually a California insurance company cannot assume only the risk of earthquakes for Californian houses. It has to deal with reinsurance companies that will assume earthquake risk across various regions of the earth. So it does that because it assumes that earthquake risk can be diversified across the planet. Okay, so that we need to check this out. So first, it is known in geophysics and seismology that strong earthquakes will generate small earthquakes at large distances. However, those small earthquakes will not generate, they are generally really small, so they will not create a lot of damage. So we can, so based on this argument, we can assume that seismic risk can be diversified across the planet. But what about very large earthquakes? So what if there's a magnitude 8 or 9 earthquake in Japan, really a catastrophic earthquake that occurs in Japan? Does it increase the risk of having a large earthquake across the Earth? So does it increase the risk of having an magnitude over 6 earthquake in California or in the Middle East? If it were the case, it would be very bad news for reinsurance companies because you would have a systematic seismic risk across the Earth because of very large events. So surprisingly, it is only very recently that the study of very large earthquakes have been studied in geophysics. So this is from a paper in Nature Geoscience that they conclude that only the regional hazard of larger earthquakes is increased, but not the global hazard. So that's quite reassuring for the reinsurance industry. So what we wanted to do, Arthur and I, was to use instead some alternative modeling to investigate this fact. So we wanted to do some risk management applications in this case, and also through a multivariate model. So first thing, we approached the problem from a statistical point of view. We wanted to extend or create some form of multivariate INAR model, INAR in the sense of integer autoregressive. So we have further investigated the multivariate INAR model. We have extended the INAR model, the bivariate INAR model of Pedeli and Carlis, and we have performed a thorough empirical study of the dynamics of earthquake counts using the bivariate INAR and the properties of the multivariate INAR that we have derived. So we'll be able to analyze the size and the direction of the interactions of the earthquake counts among tectonic plates and different magnitudes. Okay, so a little background on integer-valued autoregression. So time series of counts occur in various situations. So we can think about the number of claims, number of car accidents, number of trades in finance, and sports statistics, the number of goals of Scott Gomez in the last year, which is flat at zero, by the way. So really trivial time series. And if you want to model the evolution of the number of counts over time, it's not that obvious to do that. First, you cannot just think about a basic autoregressive of order 1 model, AR1 model, for discrete counts, simply because with an AR1 model, you need to have continuous values. So if you really want to model the evolution of counts over time, you need to either model the mean of a latent process, say you model a mean of a Poisson variable over time so that you have some sort of Cox process, or you use thinning operators, and that's the approach that we're going to do, basically because in a multivariate framework, using latent processes is not really ideal. So we'll take a look at integer-valued autoregression. So a really quick review of what is a basic univariate integer valued autoregression. So basically, it's based on a thinning operator. So if you observe capital N number of events, then you will pick a random number of these N events with probability P. So P circle N will be the sum of the number of events that you will keep among the N events that have occurred. So how we can interpret that is, say, if we take a look at a basic INAR1 model. So here the idea is to explain the number of events at time t as a function of the past number of events plus a noise. So here, basically, out of the n t minus 1 events, you pick binomially and randomly a set of events from the past with probability p, and then you add a noise. So if you have observed n t minus 1 event, then of course you will just pick a random subset of these events and you will add some noise. With an NRQ model, well, it's basically the same idea. So you write the number of events at time t as a function of the past number of events using thinning operators as well applied on the past number of events. So using a NR1 model for earthquake counts does make some sort of sense, because when you have a major earthquake or a major set of earthquakes, you will always have a set of aftershocks afterwards, and the rate of aftershocks will decrease over time. So that's why picking up a fraction of the past events does make some sense in terms of seismic risk. Okay, so in a multivariate framework, unfortunately, not much has been done on this issue. There's Franke and Subba-Rao, which have published, it's not even published in the journal, it's a technical report. And there's also Latour, who was a former professor at UCAM as well, who developed some theoretical results on the multivariate INAR model. Well, they have developed results on multivariate INAR based on two types of thinning operators. But here in our paper, we will take a look at binomial thinning. So it's a sort of a particular case or one way to look at the problem. So in a multivariate framework, you have a set of D counts, of D types of counts, D variables that you model its evolution over time. So if you take a look at, say, the first type of count, so the first element here, it will be written as a function of the past number of events from the other types of counts. So here in our framework, we'll take a look at D different regions in terms of the counts of earthquakes, and we will write it as a function of the number of earthquakes on the other plates at the previous time period. So here, once again, when we use a thinning operator, it's quite straightforward. So we apply it element by element. So it's here the number of counts at time t is written as a function of the past counts with p11, p12. So the thinning operator is applied on each element. Okay, so Franke and Subba-Rao in 1993 have derived some important results to deal with divariate INAR. So first, conditions for stationarity. And in terms of applications, this is crucial. The properties of the maximum likelihood estimates. So they are asymptotically normal, unbiased. There's existence of the likelihood ratio test. So we can deal with that in terms of statistics, in terms of analysis. And this is the basic framework that has been done. So in the line of Franke and Subba-Rao, we have derived additional results that are useful in statistics and forecasting the time series of counts. So the unconditional mean, the autoregression matrices, forecasting results. And I don't think we're going to have a lot of time to take a look at that, but we have closed form formulas in terms of matrices notation for the unconditional mean, autocovariance, and everything. And also semi-closed form expressions for forecasting. So the conditional expectation is closed form, but for the variance, conditional variance, it's written recursively. It's not as closed form as the other expressions, but still very workable. Okay, so of course, from a theoretical point of view, multivariate INAR does make sense, but from a numerical point of view, it really can get messy. So instead of focusing on a set of D types of counts, we'll focus on, well, on a bivariate model, so two types of counts simultaneously. So If you take a look at the basic multivariate model and you apply it in a two-dimensional, so this is quite straightforward. So the number of elements of type number one is written as a function of the number of elements of type number one in the past, and same thing for the second type of count. So you apply the thinning operator on the past number of type one event, and the thinning operator on the type two type of event in the previous time period. Okay, so Pedeli and Carlis, they have applied a diagonal model, so meaning that P12 and P21 is equal to zero. So this will be known as the diagonal model, meaning that there's no cross autocorrelation effect. So the second type, so when you get P12 equal to zero, then there's no effect from the second type of number of counts, and same thing for the second type, there's no effect from the first one. So there's no cross autocorrelation. So in terms of application of bivariate INR, Pedeli and Carlis is about the first type of numerical application where they made some sense out of the results and they applied it for daytime and nighttime road accidents. Of course, generalizing it to a non-diagonal model, so that's one of the key purposes of our paper as well, is to investigate the model, the bivariate model, with a non-diagonal probability matrix. Once again, it's quite straightforward. So we have further derived theoretical results in terms of Granger causality test. So we wanted to figure out if if the number two type of claims or counts can influence the number one type of count, and same thing if the first type of count can influence the second type of count. So. And we have also derived closed form expressions for the likelihood function, unconditional mean, autocorrelation, and everything with Poisson errors. So Granger causality test, it's if you want to check if the second type of count can influence the first type of count over time, well, it's just a matter of verifying if P12 is different from zero when P21 equals zero. So you start with the diagonal model, which with P21 and P12 equals zero, and then you assume that this one is different, and then you check if it's statistically significant. You can do that in both ways, so it's quite straightforward. Likelihood function, so if you take a look at basic INR model, so if there's just one factor, so if it's just in univariate, it's just a convolution of a binomial and a Poisson. So here it's a convolution of two binomials. So once again, it is doable, and so it's doable from a numerical point of view. So that's really interesting. So of course, the unconditional mean cross correlation is just a specific case of what we have done in a divariate case. So, but here are results that are quite interesting. Okay, so well, the whole point of the presentation was also to look at an application to earthquakes. So just a quick recap on earthquake risk. So well, all the buildings and everyone is sitting on a layer of rocks that tend to move very slowly over time. So and not move a lot, just a few millimeters or centimeters. But when they move, they do create friction, and this friction creates an accumulation of energy that when it crosses some limit, it is released. So when this energy is released, it creates an earthquake. So basically, earthquakes generally occur at the limits of what we say is a tectonic plate. So a tectonic plate is just a set of a region, underground regions on which we sit over. So all the layers below us are divided in a set of tectonic plates. And generally, these plates move, and they create also earthquakes. So over a tectonic plate, we'll have a lot of earthquakes. Those are interplate earthquakes. And we also have earthquakes within a tectonic plate, which are intraplate earthquakes. So when an event such as an earthquake occurs, the seismic wave, okay, the movement of the plate, will create movement on a long distance, and then it will fragilize other faults that were stable, and then this will create other smaller earthquakes, which are known as aftershocks. So basically, you have So you have main shocks, which generally are a severe earthquake. You have earthquakes that are generated afterwards, which are aftershocks. And sometimes you also have smaller earthquakes that announce a bigger event, which is known as a foreshock. Okay. So one of the goals, one of the applications that we applied with the bivariate INAR model was to try to understand the dynamics of the counts of earthquakes across the planet. So we wanted to divide the Earth in a set of regions. So instead of doing circles and squares and everything, we decided to use tectonic plates. It has a really interesting interpretation as well. So the Earth, as you will see, has a lot of tectonic plates beneath us. So there's 16 tectonic plates. In our data set, there are 17 because the Pacific plate has been cut in two. One of the regions that are the most active, of course, is Japan, which is at the limit of four tectonic plates. California, approximately as well, the same. It is also close to San Andreas Fault, so it is very risky. And basically what we have done is that we have taken the whole list of earthquakes that happened over on the planet from the last 50 years, and then we classified all those earthquakes in the various zones, which are the tectonic plates. So we needed two databases, one with the frontiers, with all the boundaries, and the other one with all the occurrences of earthquakes to be able to count the number of earthquakes on each tectonic plate. So we took M over 5 earthquakes, magnitude over 5, which counts to 70,000 events, and we also picked M over 6 events, which are magnitude over 6, which is 3,000 events. To be able to count the number of earthquakes, we had to divide the time of this time horizon of 40 or 50 years approximately into time ranges of 3, 6, 12, 24, 36, and 48 hours, because the seismic wave tends to travel quite quickly. So we had to divide it into time periods of a few hours. So this turns out to have a lot of periods of observation in the data. Okay, so if you take a look at the evolution of earthquakes over time, for two tectonic plates, you will have that the earthquakes on two tectonic plates occur within H hours, then this will count as dependence in the noise. So this will count as dependence in this component here, in the epsilons. If you have earthquakes that occur in the time period H or N2H, say 3 hours, 6 hours, this will count as first order space-time contagion. So that's the interpretation of the model. So the space is the two sets of tectonic plates, and time is the autoregression over time from the two types of counts. Okay. So to check if the model is interesting, we have also compared with four other models. So independent Poisson, so Poisson independent over time and independent across the plates. Poisson independent over time but dependent across the plates. Two independent INAR, meaning that there's autoregression over time for a single plate, but no dependence across the two plates. The diagonal binar of Teddy Lynn Carlis, meaning that the two INARs here are dependent. And the full model, which includes space-time contagion of order one. So we have estimated those five models across all possible pairs of tectonic plates, which is 136 possible pairs, at six time frequencies, just so at 3 hours, 6 hours, etc., to be able to understand the dynamics of the travel of the seismic wave. So first, when we take a look at all pairs of tectonic plates, autoregression in time, okay, no, so the dependence of the counts for a single plate is really important. So autoregression in time, so this component here in the diagonal, so P11 or P22, is extremely important. So when compared with basic models, it comes out that it is very highly statistically significant. So if you take a look at the dynamics of counts, you will have a long period of zero, so it's quite quiet, and then you have a main shock and then a set of aftershocks. So this is in terms of of count here, it is a clear evidence for autoregression. And of course, when you take a look in seismology, there's the Omori's law that tells us that the rate of aftershocks decreases over time. So it's once again an evidence of autoregression in the data. Okay, so if we take a look at pairs of tectonic plates, so we just increase the level of complexity. So from two independent inar to a diagonal binar, we add dependence just in the noise. So we just take a look at the dependence here. So for between 7 and 13% of pairs of tectonic plates, so depending on the frequency, the dependence in the noise is important. And for approximately the same number of pairs of tectonic plates, space-time contagion is important. And if you wonder why 7 to 13% is such a low number, of course, not all tectonic plates are contiguous. So if you take a look at the map, you don't expect a lot of space-time dependence between this plate and, say, this plate. So there's a large, very large distance across these two plates, and you don't expect space-time contagion other than just over this small region, over these two plates, rather than over two plates that are very large. So don't forget, very far apart. So don't forget we have compared all of the possible pairs, meaning that in those pairs there are tectonic plates that are very far apart. So we didn't expect to have space-time contagion for those plates that are very far apart. So that's kind of reassuring for us, because Parsons and Velasco 2011 just said that very large earthquakes don't tend to be contagious at very large distance. So this is an additional evidence that for M over 5 earthquakes, apart from contiguous tectonic plates, there's no further space-time contagion. So that's quite reassuring. So if you take a look at why it is so important to add cross-autocorrelation, we could check two tectonic plates that exist, the Okhotsk and West Pacific, that sit beneath Japan. So this is the expected number of events in the proposed model. So there's autocorrelation, cross-autocorrelation, and noise. So those are the mean of each of those components. And this is from the diagonal model. So the M, so the small m here, is the contribution of the number of earthquakes on the other plate. So if you want to explain the number of earthquakes on the Okhotsk plate, here it's a function of itself, at time t minus 1, plus what happened on the other plate. So and this component is really important. So 0.028 may seem like a low number, but if you take a look at the number of earthquakes that occur on the West Pacific plate, you can peak at a lot of times, sometimes at 10, 20, 30, and 77 in March 2011. So this 0.028 times M can be very important, so the diagonal model can really understate the number of earthquakes on the other plates. So I'll just skip this part, because we have done Granger causality tests, which for me are more interesting. So we have checked the appropriateness of the non-diagonal model, but here we might be interested in checking if in which direction does the seismic wave go mainly. So if you take a look at pairs of tectonic plates, there seems to be unidirectional causality, meaning that that's the number of earthquakes of one plate that mainly influence the other and not the inverse. So this is the case for those plates. And there's bidirectional causality for those sets of plates as well. So we have also applied the model. So instead of just using space, we have also divided the severity of earthquakes in terms of magnitude. So for each of those 17 tectonic plates, we have checked if the M over 6 earthquake can help explain the M below 6 earthquakes and vice versa. So if there's a significant aftershock and foreshocks in the data. And with Granger causality test, we do find that aftershocks are significant for all tectonic plates, but foreshocks are not necessarily that significant for all tectonic plates. It is indeed the case for approximately half of the tectonic plates that you can sort of predict large earthquakes with smaller earthquakes. So in terms of pairs of tectonic plates, we have run those causality matrices. So this is illustrated in the paper. So you say that tectonic plate 15 causes number 1, so it's white, so there's no causality. But when the square is gray or dark, really dark, means a great causality. Final example, so in terms of risk management, we just wanted to project the total number of earthquakes on 2 tectonic plates. So we took an actual scenario that occurred on March 10, 2011. So suppose there are 20 earthquakes that happen on Okotch and on the Okotch plate, and 46 earthquakes on the West Pacific plate. So that scenario really occurred on this March. We wanted to project the distribution of the total number of earthquakes on 2 plates, under those 2 plates. So the following table is just the probability of having more than n events over the some time horizon. So we have projected the number of earthquakes over 1 day, 3 days, 7 days, and 14 days. And here is just the probability of having more than 5, 10, 15, or 20 earthquakes. And you see that the probability is below in the non-diagonal model. The one that takes into account the cross autocorrelation or the dynamics between the tectonic plates really increases those probabilities of having more events, meaning that in terms of risk management, especially over the short term, can be really important. So we have discussed of so we have further derived properties of multivariate INR. We have extended the bivariate INR model as well, and we have brought some interesting applications that we think in terms of seismology and statistics as well. So that concludes my presentation. If you have questions, I'll appreciate it. Thank you.